Welcome to episode 429 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Josh, happy voting and Xbox Day!
Yeah, especially on the voting side, not so much the Xbox side for me.
Oh.
We'll talk about that a little bit later.
All right, that's fair. Well, we are going to dive into a bunch of stuff, and of course, we have lots of news about gaming in the Xbox. Let's start with some feedback from our listeners, as we often like to do. We have a follow-up from Roger, and he sent this in to entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, like you can, if you would like to send us feedback as well. A reminder, he last week said, almost daily, when we turn on the Media Center, we get a message that no tuners are found, or all tuners are in use. A reboot usually resolves the issue, but as you can imagine, not helping the spouse acceptance factor. So we talked about this and we asked some questions. We said, hey, what kind of device? Are you putting it to sleep? What are you doing with it? You know, the usual troubleshooting. Tell us more. So he's telling us more. He says, following up on my question, I have cut a support ticket to Silicon Dust, and they had me upload the latest beta and drivers. So far, so good, but only been a couple of days. FYI, I'm running a 2 Intel Nook-based PC. I'm running 2 Intel Nook-based PCs, and don't ever turn them off. So I'm assuming he also means doesn't ever put them to sleep, because that's really what we were asking about.
Right, right.
So good that this is working.
Yeah, that's great news. Silicon Dust dudes have been very, very busy lately. That actually leads us quite well into our very first story of the night tonight. So again, thank you, Roger, for messaging us, and even more so, thank you for following up. But yes, the HD Home Run guy's been very, very busy. Apparently, the Fall Creators Update on both Windows 10 and the Xbox One caused them lots and lots of fits. I didn't notice these because I just must not have been watching as much TV during the few days that all these issues were happening. And some of these issues were more towards protected channels, which aren't an issue for me. But there were lots of issues across the Xbox One and Windows 10 for anybody with the Fall Creators Update. On the Windows 10 side, they actually went so far as to release a fix that if you really wanted it that badly, you would have to like sideload the app and all of that stuff. Fortunately, it's all been fixed. At this point on Windows 10, the app that you can get from the Microsoft Store, which I still can't get used to calling the App Store, the Microsoft Store.
Yeah.
The app that you can get from that store is updated and should just work for you now, even with Fall Creators Update. And as of just today, everything should be good on the Xbox One also. So all very good things to hear from the Silicon Dust guys. Let's move on to another cool little site that I found this week. I don't think this is a site that even Richard knew about, or else he probably would have shared it with you guys.
You're right.
This is a site called Real or Fake 4K. I love the name. It gets right to the point. The idea here is there are lots and lots of 4K UHD Blu-ray disc out now, and some of them are totally faux reels for 4K, right? They were shot in 4K, mastered in 4K. Everything is beautiful, gorgeous, real 4K. Some of them aren't. So this site has a list of basically every major release that has come out on UHD Blu-ray and dumps it into one of three categories. Is it real 4K? Is it fake 4K? Or is it nearly 4K? Here's how he differentiates those. So real 4K is simple. It was either digitally shot in 4K or an even higher resolution, or it was shot on film and then scanned at 4K, and then all of the mastering was done in 4K. That's real 4K. That's what you, I think, expect when you buy a UHD Blu-ray. That's not always what you get. Fake 4K at the opposite end of the spectrum, that's when they've maybe at best taken a 2K master, like a 1080p master, and then all they did is upscale it and maybe do some retouching here and there. That's not real 4K. It's just upscaling. That's not fancy. Our drives can do that.
Right, exactly. I was just going to say that your existing player could probably scale it itself from a Blu-ray, unless they did some, you know, other work on it. That's just kind of scammy. And you know what scares me is that that list of fake 4K discs is longer than the real 4K list.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, it really is. Now, there's also a category that they call nearly 4K. And for these movies, they have a 4K master, but it was originally shot on a camera, usually digital, probably always digital in this case, with a resolution that was lower than 4K. Now, sometimes it's close. Apparently, there are like 3.6K cameras out there. I don't really understand that, but apparently it's a thing. And some movies are shot at that, and then they'll just do somewhat of upscaling and stuff. So that's better than 4K, or better than fake 4K, but it's still not real 4K. Here's a really important thing to point out, though. Just because it's not absolute real 4K doesn't mean it doesn't look great. You know what is a movie that isn't in the real 4K category that you probably love? Wonder Woman. Not real 4K, but it looks great, right? Right, Richard? You own that one.
I do. And that's very interesting because it did look great. Is it nearly, or is it in the totally fake category? Looks like it is in the totally fake category. Very disappointing. You know what else? Westworld, the series that I just received today. Fake 4K.
Sure is.
I'm really surprised by that. I am astonished that that wasn't like shot on a Red or something like that.
Yeah. Or kind of better, just shoot it on film. Because if you shoot it on film, you can go even higher than 4K.
Well, I don't know that I would argue that that is better, but okay. I mean, the Red and Blackmagic...
Why isn't that better?
Because the Red and Blackmagic cameras are phenomenal. And Sony also makes very, very good 4K cameras. I have a hard... I don't know. I actually am firmly entrenched in digital now, and I personally don't care about that film feel. I just don't care.
Oh, no. No, I don't care about the film feel either. But, like, there are movies on this list that are ancient. Like, movies... Lawrence of Arabia, I think, is in here. A Charlie Brown Christmas is in here. Like, these are movies from the 30s. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is on here in real 4K. And they're able to do that because it was shot on film, which can then be scanned at a super high resolution. Like, I was really bummed. Like, we have all of these fake 4K movies here because 1080p happened and all of these movie directors started filming movies digitally in 1080p, and you're stuck there. Like, you're not, anything else is just upscaling at that point.
Yeah, agreed. But films like Lawrence of Arabia, which, by the way, is in the real 4K list.
Yeah.
Those films were also filmed in CinemaScope in the wide format. So they're pretty much using the largest picture format that you could, short of IMAX for video. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. So anyway, I don't even know where I found this website this week, but I found it and loved it. And it'll be one that I go back to quite frequently, I think, as I am buying new 4K Blu-rays.
Yes. So I am bookmarking this now. My bookmark name, to keep with the trend of calling things fake, is Fake 4K.
There you go.
All right. Well, so while we're talking about 4K and while we're talking about discs, don't close that tab. with that site, because now you can get a whole bunch of 4K UHD discs from Amazon at a really great rate. And I have to say that Josh found this. There's a page on Amazon where you can find discs that cost anywhere from, you know, $30 down to $17, depending on the title, but you can get three for $49.99. And that discount gets applied at checkout. So it's kind of automatic. You pick the movies that you want, and once three of them are in there and you check out, then the discount occurs. It's kind of magic. If you look at all these titles, there's a ton of titles here. I was looking through this. I mean, all you have to look at is how tiny the little blip on your scroll bar is as you go through this list. And you can see that this seems like it's pretty much, I don't know, every UHD Blu-ray disc that's available.
Yeah, that's how it seems. Like, I think we're used to seeing promotions like this and thinking, three disc on special? I bet there's not even three disc that I want.
Right.
And I can come up with like eight that I want.
Well, you know, eight, I don't know. I think you need to not be so greedy, Josh, maybe. Start with three. See how that goes over at home.
Yeah, that would be the smart thing to do.
No, this is phenomenal. This is a great find. There are some great titles here. And if you care about that real or fake 4K thing, you can also verify that by checking the real or fake 4K link that we will have in our show notes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, one more thing we wanted to follow up on. We talked about YouTube TV last week. That was actually the big news. And it's available. I didn't know it was available. I haven't had time to sign up. And as I had mentioned, I plan to sign up. So I'm pretty excited about this. This is something I'm going to give a try.
Yeah, I didn't know of it being available until the weekend. So I think it was maybe Friday, but maybe not even earlier than Saturday. It took a few days.
So here's a question for you, Josh. How do you become aware of a cool new app that's available for your console if the only thing that you're accessing is your console?
That's actually not that hard to do.
Okay.
So what I do is occasionally, and I don't do this nearly enough, but what I will do is just open up the store, which even with the new update still takes forever to open, and then go to the app section and you can view all the latest apps. And they basically have them listed in reverse chronological order. I released it.
Okay, but that how do you know that that's going to be cool? It's like I just feel like with all of the advertising that's plastered on the Xbox home screen, how is it that this isn't something that got promoted?
Probably because it's a Google property. Right? I mean, why would Microsoft want to like go out of their way to advertise that?
I guess so, but I don't know. We're not going to talk about a story tonight that is kind of showing how Google and Microsoft are cooperating on the development side. But I think that maybe those days of Microsoft and Google sparring are over. At least I like to think that.
I don't mean to burst your bubble here, Richard, but
but Richard, you're naively foolish.
But remember back 5-ish years ago, maybe a little bit more than that, when Samsung and Apple were trying to sue each other into oblivion?
Okay.
Yet Samsung continued to make displays for the iPhone?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, by the way, that case is not over. It's being retried again.
Of course it is. So various parts of companies can be sort of getting along while the rest of the company is fighting.
That's her.
Yeah. Think of Romeo and Juliet. Their families hated each other, but Romeo and Juliet still loved each other. They found a way until they didn't. That was a poor analogy, I think. Hopefully these companies aren't going to end their lives.
I think that was a good analogy, but well, yeah, except for the ending, the live right. part. Yeah. So let's end Spoilers. This segment and move on to gaming. Xbox One X is here, but when we say here, we mean here in the broad sense, not here right. as in Josh's living room.
And a lot of our listeners are saying, but you just said last week, Josh, that you were getting one. And that's true. I kept my pre-order through Amazon for the Project Scorpio edition that I pre-ordered on August 20th, the day that it became available. Did I get it on release day? Like everybody was supposed to who ordered it from Amazon with Prime? No.
Okay.
I am scheduled to get it tomorrow.
So what's going on
after release day?
Why is this happening?
I don't know. I contacted Amazon today to try to figure out what the heck happened here. Like, did I do something wrong? Because if I did something wrong, I want to know so that I don't do it again. And they couldn't really tell me that. I asked multiple times. They told me about how the algorithm figures out whether or not you can get release day delivery. And so I tested that by going to the store page for some games that aren't out yet. And everything that's supposed to show up did show up. I'm like, I can't explain how I could have done something wrong here. Tell me what I did. Tell me why I'm not getting this tomorrow or today. And they couldn't. All they did was say, well, we can give you a $5 gift card. Thanks.
Ooh.
A $5 gift card makes me feel a lot better about not having my $500 gaming console the day that it was released. That I would have if I would have ordered from Best Buy
right.
or GameStop or pretty much anybody else.
Right, right. Exactly. I think what I would have done is I would have gone to the local Best Buy. I would have gone to see if they had any on hand. I would have checked to see if Amazon would take it back since they didn't meet their delivery promise and sent it back to them, rejected the shipment.
Yeah, maybe I should have done that. I don't know, but I'll get it tomorrow. But like my Josh, midweek is always insane.
Josh, I think you're actually looking a little bit peaked. You may need to stay home from work tomorrow.
Well, I really can't.
Oh, okay.
Like tomorrow's kind of a weird day, but it's also a day that I was really looking forward to taking my Xbox to work with me. It's a weird day where we know we're going to have some downtime plus lunch and all that stuff. So I was like, this is going to be perfect. I'll get it on Tuesday. I can play some on Tuesday. I can work on transferring all of my games across my home network like we talked about on last week's show. How to do that easily so that you're not having to re-download 90 gigabyte games over the internet. I have all of that done on Tuesday night, and then I'll be ready to go on Wednesday. And that is not the case. And if I were to wait for it to be delivered to me at home tomorrow, it'll be in the afternoon. So that's not going to work for me taking it to work. Plus, I'm gone like all afternoon into the evening tomorrow. So tomorrow's terrible. So I changed the delivery and had them hold it at the shipping hub, which is right near where I work anyway. And I'm going to be able to just pop on in there on my way to work tomorrow and pick it up that way. But I still have the problem of installing all the games.
Hopefully they don't screw that up, like the pickup part.
Well, I've gone to the hub to pick up things from UPS before, and it's never been a big deal. So hopefully I will have it tomorrow. Now, for all of you who do have your Xbox One X's or are going to be getting them soon, I wanted to hit on one thing that hasn't been talked about very much lately. When Microsoft first initially unveiled the Xbox One X, which was a year and a half ago almost, that would have been at E3 of 2015, one of the features that Microsoft announced was that it would load games faster. And that's a really big deal because the Xbox One can take forever to load some games. And part of that is due to the fact that they use a 5400 RPM hard drive in these things. And the other part of it was that the internal bus that was being used was SATA 2, not SATA 3. That's slow. And they said that we should expect dramatically faster load times with the One X. And then this year, they hardly talked about it. They barely talked about it at all, which made me start to wonder, are they backing away from that? Like, are the load times not as good as what they were expecting? Well, I was scouring the internet all weekend long trying to find information on the One X, and I found a fantastic YouTube video that a reviewer of the One X made analyzing loading times. And for his analysis, he took an Xbox One S and an Xbox One X and would, you know, put games in it or fire games up at the same time or in the same places or whatever on the One S and the One X and compare the times. There's really good news here. If both consoles were loading the exact same thing, so like just a regular 1080p game, a game that does not have any One X enhancements, the One X did load those games almost twice as fast as the regular Xbox One or One S. So that's really stinking awesome. Now, if the game has enhancements like 4K enhancements or it's doing super sampling and stuff like that, then it's really, really dependent on the game. Some games were still faster when using the 4K super sampling or straight up 4K visuals, but they weren't always faster. And you can expect that, right? Like, it's loading textures that could be up to four times the size of 1080p textures, or maybe more. So you would expect those to load slower, but sometimes they were still faster, but not always. Gears of War 4, for example, was a couple of seconds slower in 4K than 1080p, but overall, really good news on the loading times. The other thing that he analyzed was, were loading times different when loading from the internal drive versus an external hard drive? And on the original Xbox One and the One S, they were typically faster on an external hard drive because the USB 3 bus was faster than the internal SATA 2 bus. That's not the case anymore with the One X. In all of his testing using the internal drive versus an external 2 terabyte drive and an external 8 terabyte drive, all of the load times were practically identical, for all intents and purposes, the same. So if you've only been using an external drive to try and get some faster performance, well, you don't need to be hanging that drive off of there just for performance anymore. You're probably still going to need it, though, just because of capacity, because the Xbox One X only has a 1 terabyte hard drive. And with the size of some of these games, that's not going to cut it.
Right.
I do briefly want to touch on some of those games, though, because as reviews started coming out on Friday, that's when the release embargo was lifted, I was reading a lot of reviews that were like, well, it's better, but we don't really know what kind of support we're going to get from third parties or when they're going to start releasing all of their Xbox One X enhanced updates. They started releasing bunches and bunches of them. They announced last week that there would be 70 titles updated within the first 2 weeks, and at least half of them are already available. And they're great. They look really, really good. At least that's what a lot of other people are saying, since I still haven't been able to play any of them. But but as you might expect, some of these files are getting enormous. Quantum Break is the biggest one that I've seen so far. Quantum Break was always the biggest because you could download the 4K videos. Richard, I don't know if you remember this, but Quantum Break.
Yep. I totally remember this.
Those 20-minute TV right. episodes, basically. Right. Yeah.
Part video, part and, game.
Right. And you could stream those. That's how it would work by default. Or you could download them. And I think if you downloaded them, I think just the extra download for the videos was 70 gigabytes, and the game itself was already like 40. Well, now, if you want to download everything with the One X enhancements, it's 170 gigabytes.
Wow.
That's bonkers. That's huge. I don't think I'm going to be doing that. But they're coming out really fast. And it's not just the first party stuff. Obviously, Gears of War, Killer Instinct, Forza Motorsport 7, they're all available now. But Final Fantasy 15 is out there. Call of Duty has their updates. Lots and lots and lots of games have already released their updates. So basically nothing but good news for people, except for some of these shipping delays. It's not just me. This is happening for a lot of people in the US, and it sounds like it's even more widespread across the UK. So, but it's all just Amazon. Everybody else is really happy and has their consoles already, except for me. Boo.
So while you were talking, Sixlayer in the chat was mentioning that he did get his, and I think he said he got a gift card too. Anyway, he was bringing up that the dashboard is not 4K, that it is just upscaled. Did you know anything about that?
I did not know that. That's interesting.
It is interesting. And I was trying to think about this a little bit, and I'm wondering if that's just because, you know, they're kind of using good, I don't know what the right term is, but good progressive practices, basically, where you're looking at your display size, not necessarily the capabilities of the device. But with this out, I wonder if at some point in time we'll actually see a true 4K dashboard someday.
I wonder if they chose, if they deliberately chose not to do a 4K dashboard for a couple of reasons together. The first one being, do you really care? Like, it's just the dashboard. Do you really care? It's the games that I want to look really good. But more importantly, what I want the dashboard to be, it's not pretty, it's fast. I want that dashboard to be as fast as possible. And that's something that the Xbox One, up until this fall creators update, has really struggled with.
Yeah.
Now it's finally fast. But if it was 4K, it might not be so fast.
Yeah,
so I'm
really
okay with that.
Yep.
I'm absolutely okay with that.
Yep.
Just make my games look good. All right, let's move on to some other Microsoft gaming news that's not specifically about the Xbox One X. The first one, Phil Spencer, of course, was out doing lots of interviews in promotion of the One X, but he talked about a lot of things other than just the One X. And one of them was a little quote where he mentioned, and this is basically a quote here, he says that his new position has given him more latitude to reach gamers on any device rather than using gaming to make Windows more successful. And people have gone crazy speculating on what that means. I mean, I saw articles that said, essentially, Microsoft is basically saying that they're going to start releasing their first-party games on PlayStation. No, that's not what they said. And I don't think we should go that far. And of course, some people used as justification for that, well, they've already got Minecraft on PlayStation. Yes, they do. They have Minecraft on everything, absolutely everything. Part of the reason for that, it was already on all of those platforms before Microsoft bought Mojang,
exactly,
the studio that made Minecraft.
Exactly.
Would they have released it for PlayStation 4 after, like, if they had been the ones developing it from the beginning? I'm not so sure. Maybe they would have. Maybe. But probably not. I still think it's possible. Like, Microsoft has been way, way more willing to work with other companies across cross-platform gaming. You can play Rocket League on an Xbox One with people who are playing on a Nintendo Switch or on a PC, and they're totally willing to do it with PlayStation gamers, but Sony won't do it. So is it possible? Sure. Is that what they're talking about? Probably not. What I think is probably more likely is moving some more of their games to Steam on Windows, not just selling their games through the Microsoft Store, and then also maybe branching out to Android and iOS.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty likely and would make a ton of sense. And in fact, they already have. Isn't the Halo, you don't know, but don't they have a mobile version of that Halo Spartan Assault game? And isn't that on iOS and Android? Now I'm not sure, because I didn't really care about that game.
This is the sound of Richard shrugging.
I don't know. So that's interesting news, but I'm not going to get too excited about it yet. And I think it is primarily more about mobile and probably Steam. Next story that came out of another interview with Phil Spencer, And that is that apparently Microsoft's probably going to release a game streaming service. The quote here is, Microsoft will probably debut a streaming service that doesn't require a console for some types of content in the next 3 years, Spencer said. A 2012 trial of such a service inside the company was too costly and never made it to market. But Microsoft's progress in Azure cloud services over the past few years is changing the economics and quality level. So they're thinking about it. And like the wording of all of that makes it sound like it's practically a done deal. Like they're going to do it. They're just ironing out the details. And again, it wouldn't be an unprecedented service. Sony already does this with PlayStation Now. You can play PlayStation games on a Windows PC using PlayStation Now, which just streams the games. They all run in the cloud, and it just streams the video of the games down to your PC. Of course, it also works on PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4, but it also works on PC. And you could see them doing the same sort of thing for an Xbox gaming service. Probably not on PlayStation, but I don't know. What are they going to do this on? I mean, maybe if it's just focused on it being the service, then I guess it would be on Windows PCs and Xbox. Like that would make sense. It's just kind of weird in that they already have a similar service that's the Xbox Game Pass, but instead of that being streaming, you download the whole game. And that's, well, I was going to say it's only on Xbox, but that's not true because there are Xbox Play Anywhere games, and those would work on Windows 10 PCs also. So maybe that's one of the sticking points, is figuring out how to make Game Pass also work with, like, from the business perspective, how do they make both of those types of services exist at the same time? Or is it all one thing and all of that? So I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I kind of think that they must have a platform play here that we're not really aware of yet. Because if not, really, what's in it for them to do this? This is a whole lot of infrastructure investment.
Yes, but it also means that you can play games on underpowered systems.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've just got a laptop, you can still use like a laptop with dedicated graphics or non-dedicated graphics, just integrated graphics. You can still use PlayStation Now because it's not doing any of the heavy rendering on your computer.
Right.
And so that helps with laptop sales. That helps with people who maybe don't upgrade to the Xbox One X and then whatever comes after that. Like maybe the service continues to work on Xbox One even after we've moved on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe people can play those amazing new games on their older machines, just maybe not in the same, at the same quality level and stuff like that. I'm not sure. That would be weird. That would kind of cause issues with selling hardware, I would think. I'm not sure. I think it's got to be more just about having that subscription revenue. It's all about, you know, everything in business now is about that monthly recurring revenue, and it's all about services. Everything is a service, so they can get that monthly subscription fee out of you.
Yep. No, that's true. And, you know, since that seems to be a big part of the revenue that Microsoft recently reported, apparently it's working pretty well for them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, before we get out of the gaming section, we, of course, want to update you on this week's deals with gold and the Spotlight sale. Not a ton here. A couple of titles worth pointing out. But one thing I want to remind people of, as they're looking at the last couple of weeks of the deals with gold being kind of pathetic and anemic, we're about 2 weeks away from the Black Friday sale. If they follow the same schedule as last year, the Black Friday sale on digital titles will probably start November 17th. Probably. They haven't announced it yet, but that's probably when it'll start, a week before Black Friday. So hold on to your money. You know, if you don't see anything in this list, don't worry about it, because in less than 2 weeks, you're going to have a ton of games to buy at great prices. But if you're looking for something that maybe you haven't played yet, It's on your backlog. You've been interested in it and you really want something to play on your Xbox One X and you don't mind downloading huge, huge, huge games. Quantum Break's on sale this week and it's $20. And I really, really liked Quantum Break. If you haven't played it yet, get it. It's really good. It's really good. Also, The Surge, this is the other game I want to recommend. If you were into Dark Souls, you know, really hard 3D action games, The Surge is like that, but instead of being in a fantasy environment, it's in a sci-fi environment. I think it looks pretty cool, but I haven't tried it out yet. This game just came out in May, and right now it's on sale for $24, so that's a really fantastic deal. And both of them are Xbox One X enhanced with the updates out right now. So it's a great time to pick those games up if you're looking for some enhanced games to play on your brand new console. And then a quick reminder on Games with Gold for November. You've still got about a week left to get the Turing Test on Xbox One. And then you can also get Trackmania Turbo for free all month long. And then on the 360 side right now, you can get Nights into Dreams before we get into next week. You know, actually, we should probably cover the rest of the month too. So starting November 16th on the Xbox One side, you can get Tales from the Borderlands. That's one I'm excited to get. And then for the second half of the month on the 360 side, Deadfall Adventures will be available. But that is it for our extended gaming section this week.
All right, cool. And that is it for the news in a fairly short news cycle because it was all about the Xbox for the most part. So let's talk about what's going on in our entertainment centers. I'm going to start with small stuff. You remember we talked about the digital copy upgrade process that Vudu had available?
Mm-hmm.
And basically you could use your iPhone or I think your Android phone to snap the UPC on the back of your disc and it would give you the ability to upgrade it, in quotes, to a digital copy for $2 or an HD version if you're going from a DVD to do that for $5.
Right.
A pretty good deal. And remember that if these movies are also available on Movies Anywhere, then these purchases are going to end up appearing also in your other services. So I, for example, took a movie that I had that I was interested in upgrading, got the HD upgrade. It appeared in Vudu. It appeared in iTunes. More importantly, even though it's an HD copy on Vudu, iTunes automatically bumped me to a 4K copy.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
So does it work? Does it like do a switcheroo and come back so that iTunes is like, yo, dog, I've got 4K.
Right.
Services then.
And Vudu's
oh, cool,
like,
we're all 4K.
Yo, dog, no, we're going to make them pay for that one. Yeah, no, I don't know. Remember when we first talked about this, I thought that that's how it worked because one of the things that they said is that the quality level that you have or the fidelity level would, in fact, copy across platform. But I think what that really means is that whatever you bought is going to be matched on the other platform. And
okay,
that would be the behavior that we're seeing here is that we're getting at least as good, if not better, on the other platform. Really cool. And it's an interesting way of actually upgrading to 4K if you're in the iTunes ecosystem and you're watching these on an Apple TV or something. And you could do that just by buying the digital copy of a Blu-ray that you already have that's available in 4K for just $2. That's awesome. I'm loving that.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. Next thing, TiVo has released and made available to early adopters its new experience, entirely new TiVo. Everything that you knew about TiVo, pretty much forget it. I took the TiVo upgrade. I opted in. Of course I did. So my first reaction is, and folks who follow me on Twitter probably already know this, meh. I feel like my TiVo has lost everything that was once special about it. And it's now just another DVR like all the other DVRs out there.
Aw, that stinks.
The new interface is pretty, and they're doing lots of stuff. There's stuff coming in from the side, stuff coming in from the bottom, stuff coming in from the left. There's too much going on, I feel like, and I feel like it's just not polished enough from that perspective. They also changed one of the fundamental key things about how TiVo works, and that is that to go back a menu, all you had to do was press left. Your D-pad was basically the way that you navigated deeper and then out of those menus. That doesn't work anymore. Now you have to go back. And the funny thing is that a lot of remote controls don't have back buttons.
Really?
Really, because TiVo didn't require a back button when it first came out. So I found out the hard way after upgrading my main TiVo that my extenders, my TiVo minis, didn't have remotes with back buttons. And it tells you this when you go to upgrade those minis, but you've already upgraded your main system by this point. So you're stuck. You have to upgrade your minis or they don't work. So I basically ended up having to upgrade it without the right kind of remote. And anytime I get deep into a menu, I just have to bail out to the top by pressing the TiVo button. It's kind of like how you have to get out of some apps in Xbox, which I hate.
What apps do that on Xbox?
Netflix, you can't get out of. You have to go back to the dashboard. And Hulu, you can't get out of. You have to go back to the dashboard.
I wouldn't know on the Hulu side, but
yeah, okay. I don't get it. But so anyway, my advice is if you're adventurous, give it a try. If you're not in a hurry, I would just wait because I'm not excited by it. Oh, the other thing they got rid of is TiVo had this great two-column television guide that on the left was the channels, you selected a channel, and then on the right was everything that's up for like the next half of a day. And it was an alternative to the grid guide. That's gone. Absolutely gone. They don't have it anymore. We have a big grid guide now. I don't get it.
Maybe there wasn't much usage of it.
Yeah, I kind of find that hard to believe, but okay, maybe that is entirely possible. All right, next thing, and this is the most exciting thing for me, is that I finally connected my ceiling speakers for Atmos, and I immediately went and played the Atmos trial thing in the Dolby app, and it was so much more awesome. Josh, I'm loving it.
I bet.
So having those ceiling speakers made a huge, huge difference in that surround feel, particularly for things that are supposed to feel like they're above you. No big surprise, obviously, but also just for general ambient sounds, because part of what Atmos is doing is it's locating things in that 3D space and your speakers around you are simulating that if they don't have the ability to actually project anything up. So it so much better than the reflecting speakers that I had before. I'm a big fan and I'm happy that I have an attic infrastructure that allows me to do this. It was definitely worth the time and the pain in my back that I have as a result.
So are you just like constantly all day, every day playing like rainforest videos in there and stuff so that you can hear the sound of the rain coming and the monkeys jumping from tree to tree above you and stuff like that?
So I have played that Dolby demo rainforest thing at least two or three times a day since I did this on Saturday. So yeah, kind of.
That's awesome.
All right. What am I watching? So, Mr. Robot, but I'm an episode behind. Episode 3 of the season was very interesting. Catches you up on what's been going on. So that's kind of fun. Firefly is almost coming to an end. And I don't know if you've been following or not, Josh, but the guys over at Spoiler in Time have said that they are going to be watching Serenity when they finish this.
Oh, good.
So
that makes sense.
I am very excited about it because this is going to be my first time watching the series and then going right into Serenity.
Oh, that's how I did it.
Ah, see, that makes more sense than the way that I did it, which had years of separation between the two. But I think it's going to be really cool. I'm looking forward to that. Also, I started season 2 of Archer. I don't know why I hadn't gone back to that, because it is funny, funny, funny. I love that show. Completely irreverent. Big Bang Theory, Modern Family, Hawaii Five-O, the usual stuff. The data on the Plex DVR is still incorrect. It has the Hawaii Five-O's put in together, so I'm missing every other one because I keep forgetting that I have to go select them manually, and then I'm having to watch it on the CBS app, which is terrible. Then This Is Us, The Flash and Arrow, been keeping up with those. This Is Us, this last episode, oh, the feels. Oh, man. Okay. And finally, I watched, what was this, a month or two ago? The Emmy Awards, maybe 3 months ago, even? It was a long time ago.
Why did you wait so long?
You know, those things that are like multiple hour engagements are hard for me to start. There's a built-in hurdle. I just, I can't get over that idea that, oh, I'm going to spend 3 hours doing this. And of course, I zipped through commercials, and that made it a little bit more tolerable. And I zipped through a lot of speeches, too. But what I did get coming out of that was that I need to watch The Handmaid's Tale. I probably need to watch Big Little Liars, because I forgot that that was David E. Kelly. And I'm a huge David E. Kelly fan. And I totally need to watch Veep.
So why do you watch this at all? Like, why don't you just go and spend 10 minutes reading a rundown of who won awards for what?
I like the award shows. And as you're saying this, I was going to mention that I have already set the recording for tomorrow night's CMA awards. I like award shows.
Okay.
I don't know. It's kind of enjoyable to see people who've done cool stuff get recognized.
That's true. Absolutely.
And then finally, this weekend, we decided to watch a sleeper. And by that, I don't mean a surprise hit. I mean something that put us to sleep. When I bought the classic Disney film, The Sword and the Stone, I also bought the classic Disney film, Robin Hood. Way not as good.
Did you have kids over or anything, or was it just the two of you watching Robin Hood?
We just decided to watch it. Well, I decided. It was my turn to pick a movie, and I decided we hadn't watched it yet. I wanted to see it, and yeah, I've seen it now. Okay, I'm done. So there's that. So that's what I have been watching. So Josh, what's going on in your entertainment center other than not an Xbox?
Yeah, not an Xbox One X. Not a ton of gaming on my Xbox at all, really. A little bit of NHL this weekend, but I did play one new game this weekend, at least new to me, but fairly new. This came out on the Xbox One in July, I believe, and that is a game called What Remains of Edith Finch. And this is a game that we played for Story Players that's out now, and you should check that out. This is a really, really interesting game. It's only 2 hours long, which is really short, and I could totally understand why some people might be really upset about the idea of paying $20 for a two-hour game. If you were taking someone with you to see a two-hour movie, it would cost you $20, or maybe just wait for a sale. I did get this game on sale, but it's really, really good. It's really good. I'm not going to say a lot about it other than, like, I will tell you what I knew going into it. What I knew was, you play as a person who is returning back to the family house, like the house that generations of people have lived in. And you are discovering the stories of how a bunch of the people of your family died. And that sounds morbid, and maybe it sounds creepy. It doesn't actually feel all that morbid, and it's only somewhat creepy. There are no like jump scares and stuff like that. It's just really, really interesting, and everything about it is really, really well done. So check that game out, and then of course go listen to the episode of Story Players that we just released this week. And that's it for me. until I actually get my hands on an Xbox One X.
Cool. Well, I hope you have it tomorrow, and I hope you have great stories to tell us. All good news, hopefully no glitches, when you're sharing what's going on next week.
That yeah, definitely.
Is it this week? So get us out of here, Josh.
Yeah. If you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/the DMZ. And then, of course, at our website, we have a couple of other podcasts. I already mentioned Story Players. One other quick thing about that, we finished Mass Effect Andromeda last week. So if you've been playing through that, we're done. And if you're done, you should go and check out the last episode in that series. Richard, you also do another podcast called Home On for the DMZ, covering home automation news. What is the latest with Home On?
I do. So the next episode out, I have already recorded with Mike Wolf. He joined me at the end of last week and also shared with me the audio from that Don't Brick My Fridge panel. I know I've been talking about this forever now, literally a month now. It will be out as our next episode. I'm very excited about it.
Very cool. All right. Well, then we also invite you to come back as we record the show live, typically Tuesday nights around 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on Mixer, and you will know for sure when the show is going live and can chat along with us, like Six Slayer and Doug and a few others did on the show tonight. And you get to get your feedback in the show as we're recording. It doesn't get cooler than that. That's going to do it for episode 429. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye. Under an hour.
Richard, it's under an hour.
I know.